Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. It's Wednesday, November 20th, 2019. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting and leaky black. Matt Norlander is here with me, and I want to start with what happened Tuesday night in Spokane, Washington. Killian Tilly returned. Killian Tilly is back. The senior forward, he was limited to just 15 games last season because of ankle surgery. Didn't play until January, never really got comfortable, only averaged 6.2 points in 16.6 minutes per contest, even though he was heading into last season Gonzaga's leading returning scorer. Regardless of the lack of production, the Zags still won 33 times last season, made the Elite Eight, mostly because Brandon Clark was amazing. Fast forward to this offseason, Killian Tilly in an operating room again, had knee surgery. So he missed the Zags' first four games, but he made his debut Tuesday night, was productive, scored 15 points, grabbed 8 rebounds in 27 minutes during Gonzaga's 72-66 victory over Texas Arlington. So UT Arlington was competitive in a tough spot on the road. Good for them. Shouts to Chris Ogden. But Norlander, let's focus on the Zags. How nice is it to have Killian Tilly back in our lives?
Killian Tilly is back. It's really good for Gonzaga. And the big question mark with Gonzaga this season is if Tilly can be healthy and at his best throughout. Because if he can, then Gonzaga is going to have a chance to make a Final Four. I mean, I've spoken with Mark Few about Killian Tilly multiple times, 5, 6, 7 times over the past few years, because Few believes that at his healthiest and at his best, that Killian Tilly has been Gonzaga's most valuable asset, and that's including when they've had the studs like Brandon Clark and Rui Hachimura. Tilly being involved and being reliable is a big-time thing for Gonzaga, for his NBA potential, but we just wait and see. I mean, I really hope this is not the case, but with Tilly in particularly, there is concern given how many issues he's had with injuries. Can he dodge that this season? Can he be back and steady and handle a significant workload going forward? It remains to be seen. I certainly hope that is the case because he's also a very fun player to watch. I think defensively, he might even be a little bit underrated in terms of what he can do overall. But just 15 games last season. He played 36 the season before and 33 the season before that, but he wasn't a starter. And so now as he enters into his senior season, I think he's the key. Gonzaga overall, I mean, I'm in on them in general. I mean, Filip Petrušev could be an NBA kind of talent. Admon Gilder will be a nice piece. He's not going to be the kind of guy who is going to drop, 20 on a given night and is the automatic go-to. Drew Timmy's a fun encouraging freshman, and I understand that most of our listeners have not yet seen Gonzaga because they've played Alabama State, Arkansas Pine Bluff, North Dakota. They had a game Friday at Texas A&M where they killed Buzz Williams Aggies, but it was a late tip and it wasn't that interesting. So, and it's a Friday night, so I doubt many of you saw that, and then they went against UT Arlington. So off to another strong start, 5-0. They got an easy one, Cal State Bakersfield. The story with Gonzaga is not who they're playing, but who is available. Getting Killian Tilly back is no small thing, in particular because, unless I am mistaken, everyone realized he was back in the fold when the Gonzaga official GP, when the Twitter account showed that to me. So unless you were in the building, like, I learned that Tilly was available when I saw on Twitter that he was actually playing. That's no small deal. Hopefully he's available going forward. Gonzaga's next real challenge, its first one, so to speak, will be when it plays at Washington on Sunday, December 8th.
And they didn't, ease him into anything. He was in the starting lineup, played 27 minutes, and again, was productive, 15 points, 8 rebounds. Go back to two seasons ago. I think this is important to remember. He was very good, averaged 12.9 points and 5.9 rebounds. This is the 2017-18 season. He's in the same front court in that season with a future top 10 pick, Rui Hachimura. He played more than Rui, scored more than Rui, rebounded more than Rui, was better than Rui. And that's what allowed him to be Gonzaga's leading returning scorer heading into last season. And then he's got the ankle, and then he doesn't play till January. And it's a little bit, for obviously different reasons, but a little bit like D'Angelo Purifoy. He missed all that time.
Right.
And when you try to join a team midseason, they've already got their rotations set. People are comfortable. You're not. Purifoy was very good as a freshman at Auburn, 11.5 points. Then he misses the entire 2017-18 season because of the FBI investigation, and then had to miss the first 9 games of last season. And then he comes back on December 15th, and he only averaged 3.7 points in 12.3 minutes per game for the final 14 that Bruce Pearl coached. And if you talk to Bruce about that, you know, what he'll tell you is he just wasn't the same player. He missed so much time, and he wasn't the same player, and he tried to join the team. Now, he's back to being good again this season, but it's more difficult than I think people realize for players to join a team midseason after they haven't been practicing and haven't been playing. And that was an issue for Killian Tilly for one reason last season, an issue for Danielle Purifoy for another reason last season. But now Tilly is back. He only missed four games this season. It's still November. And if he is, I sort of wrote this, if he's back to his pre-injury level or close to it, or how about this, maybe better, then you're exactly right. Gonzaga's got a chance to go to the Final Four, which is amazing. It'd be the second time in a four-year span. But check this out. Last season's team, again, 33 wins, goes to the Elite Eight. They lose two top 21 picks early to the NBA draft, Rui and Brandon Clark. They lose their top four scorers, period. Still, right now, they're sixth at KenPom, number three in adjusted offensive efficiency. That's pretty amazing that Mark's able to do that.
And their average margin of victory is 29.6. Now, through five games, and they haven't faced the meat of the schedule, I get all that. But Gonzaga and Few have developed a habit that is extremely hard to duplicate in recent seasons, and that is just destroying teams in terms of margin of victory. Now, obviously, I get that some of that's a factor of the league it plays in, but still, you got to do it because there are plenty of other teams that play in bad leagues that aren't able to do that. We'll see if that can continue this season because the West Coast Conference, right now, it ranks eighth at KenPom, and we're more than a tenth of the way through the season already in terms of game tonnage, the amount of games that have been played. We are more than 10% of the way through the college basketball season. Gonzaga's undefeated. St. Mary's looks solid, obviously a preseason top 25 level team. It dropped a game by two to Winthrop, but overall I still generally believe in St. Mary's. BYU has looked formidable without its best player. Keep in mind, like, TJ Hawes is playing. He's doing great. That's fine. But Yoeli Childs still will not be back until maybe that Nevada game in mid-December. BYU's 3-1 and just won with a crazy ending last Friday against Houston. It was a big win. And then San Francisco, which, you know, inherited an assistant to the head coaching position from last season because Kyle Smith took the Washington State job. Still, San Fran is 5-0, and Pepperdine is, you know, it played USC close. So the grander point I'm making, Parrish, is Gonzaga starts hot out of the gate again. Only UT Arlington has given him a game. That's the only team, and again, credit to Ogden for being able to do that with the Mavericks there. But the WCC, Gonzaga could benefit from this. If Tilly stays healthy, and they're pretty much like a top 10 level team again, but the WCC is in that, you know, 7, 8, 9 overall ranking within KenPom's conference rankings, and you do see BYU and St. Mary's be legitimate, and San Francisco stays solid, Pepperdine makes a jump, it could help Gonzaga's case all the more so because it might be able to inherit just a couple more quad one and quad two wins if it can indeed get those in league play. So just keep an eye on Gonzaga. Wanted to give you guys an early word on that. And the Tilly, I'm glad we started on it because Tilly returning is no small thing. Having him versus not having him, in my opinion, is the difference between Gonzaga having a Final Four shot and not.
So while Killian Tilly was doing that in Spokane, Anthony Lamb was putting on a show against Virginia in Charlottesville. We'll get into that next, but first, check this out.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. You've got the H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on those dirt trails and kick up some mud. Or the third-row seating gets your whole family in to experience the thrill together. The dual wireless charging pads make sure that no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead cell phone. Think about those adventurous activities you can do, like me, taking a ski trip up with the family, maybe going on a camping expedition, anything and everything. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com. So this week is pretty lame as far as interesting matchups go, but we got a competitive game Tuesday night, one that I don't know that we knew it was going to be as competitive as it actually was. Virginia beat Vermont 61-55. Nice win for the Cavaliers, but it was Anthony Lamb. He took 14 three-pointers, made 7 of them, finished with 30 points. Now, keep in mind, Syracuse's entire team only scored 34 points against Virginia earlier this season. So Anthony Lamb getting 30 by himself, pretty wild. 25 of those points came in the second half. At one point, he scored 17 straight points for Vermont. It was reminiscent on some level of Carson Edwards getting 42 against Virginia in last season's Elite Eight. Norlander, is this the type of thing that put Anthony Lamb on the radar of college basketball fans and helps people properly understand just how consistently good Vermont's been in recent years?
To a certain extent, because of the opponent here and because they kept it close. Now, to be fair, it would have been much better, and I'd have to imagine you agree with this, Parrish. Like, were you able to watch the game last night?
I did not watch it.
Okay, so a lot of people couldn't watch it because it was like an ACC Network bonus game, and it was on Fox Sports Regional Television. So I was only able to watch it on my computer by clicking on the ESPN scoreboard and clicking the watch, because my cable provider gives me the ACC Network. That's the only reason why I could watch it. So if you were a Vermont fan that lives in Memphis, you can't watch the game. And shout out if there are any Vermont fans that live in Memphis there.
Like, good luck on that one.
You know what I'm saying, though.
I assume I could have watched. What time? I think the game started
7.
Before I got home.
Yeah, it did. So yeah. It was a 7 o'clock Eastern tip.
And then I got home, and I had, like, family stuff, and then I was locked in on East Tennessee State and Kansas, and so I didn't actually see the game, but I was following it via Twitter and was very aware that Anthony Lamb was doing stuff.
He was doing stuff, yeah, and trust me, I'm not trying to check in and make sure you're watching UVM Vermont in a mid-November. But my greater point is this for your question. If that game had been available on ESPN or ESPN2, or was just more prominently displayed, I think it would have triggered it even more. I mean, yes, Vermont's been great in recent seasons. Anthony Lamb, regarded, like, if you're the kind of listener that was listening to our podcast in the offseason, and you're the kind of listener that would read CBSSports.com preseason content, and you would have seen Anthony Lamb was on our top 101 players and all that good stuff. But for him to do what he did, extremely impressive, because, I mean, a couple things on Lamb here. I had the opportunity to meet and talk with Vermont coach John Becker this summer, because I went back to South Burlington, Vermont, where I grew up, to meet up with some old high school friends for a high school reunion. And it just so happened that the very night that was happening, John Becker, who obviously lives there, was out and about, and I got to sit down with him and talk with him about the team expectations and Anthony Lamb. And when I did that, he said, Anthony has typical stuff, but still it takes a lot to do this kind of thing. Has changed his diet. Wait until you see him this upcoming season. Has shed some of the cushion. Changed his body. Is looking. He's been a great player, and he is looking, you know, all the more impressive. I can't wait to see what he's able to do with the guys that surround him this season. So you take a mental note. Okay, we'll see. Let's see what Anthony Lamb looks like. And sure enough, like, he's cut. He right now ranks 9th. In KenPom's Player of the Year algorithm, that he might be able to maintain that if they really want to funnel everything through him. They relied on him out of necessity against Virginia, but he does take. I mean, he takes a lot of threes. He's got to prove he's got that long distance shot. He still does not have it. He's shooting 10 of 39 from 3-point range so far this season. That's 25.6%. Last season, he was 36.5% on 137 attempts. And the first 2 years, I mean, he was shooting barely over 1 3 per game. That's the one key for Anthony Lamb. If he can become the first player in the history of UVM basketball to be drafted in the NBA, and it is becoming something that can be possible, proving that he can have a reliable shot beyond 18 feet is going to be necessary to that. General point on the game and the teams involved, Virginia, I had it earlier this morning. So Virginia, first of all, credit to Vermont for dropping 55 at Virginia's place. GP, I over under, And they're going to have some good teams come in there. But honestly, Virginia, 34, 34, 42 allowed before this. Vermont gets 55 at JPJ Arena. Over under 7.5 teams scoring more than 55 at Virginia this season. I actually might take the under there because Virginia leads the nation in points allowed per game. They are obviously the number one defense in adjusted defensive efficiency at KenPom. Right now, the Wahoos, 79.9 points allowed adjusted per 100 possessions. That's an absurd number. It will go up because that is so far ahead of anyone in the history of KenPom's database. It's actually outrageous. So credit to Vermont for even getting 55. Anthony Lamb kept him in it. A very strong performance. Your Carson Edwards stuff was not off the mark there. So Vermont's just a team to keep a very close eye on. They could become the best mid-major team in America this season, and if that's the case and they can run the table in the America East, Parrish, I am loving talking Vermont, given that I grew up there. We almost never give this much time to the Catamounts. Shouts to them. Shouts to Smuggler's Notch. Shouts to Sugar Bush. Vermont has a chance to have its best seed ever. And that would have been a huge seed bump situation, by the way, if they'd been able to win. Don't deny me there. They got to get the wins, though. But the potential for this team to be like a 10 seed level if they take care of business against the teams they absolutely should.
You know, it's Vermont, so it doesn't register like, I don't know, a bigger name would. But, you know, they're 67th at KenPom right now. That's a top 70 team. That's better. That KenPom rating is better than four ACC schools right now. It's better than...
Well, trivia time me. Trivia time me. Do you know him?
Oh, yeah. Well, I got him right here in front of me.
All right. Let me try and get these. I'm going to try and go 4 for 4 right off the bat. Okay. Better than Wake Forest?
Correct.
Better than Boston College?
Correct.
Better than... better than two other ones, man. Okay. Wouldn't be them. Wouldn't be... Nah. Jeez.
One of them has a great football program.
So, better than Miami?
No, Miami is 60th.
Oh, okay. Better than Clemson?
Better than Clemson. Clemson right now is sitting at 73.
And there's one more. I'm going to just guess this in the next like 10 seconds, but don't give me a hint here. Not Syracuse, not Duke, not Carolina. Not Florida State, not NC State, not Virginia. Maryland's not in the league anymore. This is actually difficult here. Who am I? When you can't look. Who on earth?
It's an ACC school in a major city.
In a major city. Oh, Georgia Tech.
Jesus Christ, no. It's not Georgia Tech.
Okay. Georgia Tech's in a major city. Okay. It's in Georgia Atlanta. Okay, so it's not Georgia Tech.
62. It's an ACC school in a major city with a football team called the Steelers.
Oh, wow. I wouldn't have thought that Pitt was that low at this point in the season. Okay.
Pitt's 83 right now.
You gave me a JC blast for even suggesting that it might be Georgia Tech. No, that's actually shocking that Vermont is lower than Georgia Tech right now.
My point is this is a quality opponent. This is a good win for Virginia. I know the narrative connected to it on Twitter was, ooh, Virginia's in trouble. And obviously, if you're Virginia, the reigning national champions, you don't want to lose a home game to Vermont. But that's a pretty good Vermont team. 4-1, got a win over St. John's, 67th at KenPom, clear favorite in the America East. How about this? So they've won at least 27 games each of the past three seasons. I know I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but for people to have proper appreciation for what John Becker's been able to do.
Yeah.
45-3 in his past 48 league games. That's wild. I don't care what league you're in.
Jeez. I didn't realize it was that good. That's obscenely good. That is Parrish, that Mark Few would be the only one that's close, and I don't think he has that few amount of losses in his last 48 of WCC play. Maybe he does, but yeah, I mean, that's incredible. Also, Vermont lost, but it prior to that started 4-0. The first time the team had been 4-0 since 77-78. They were able to win at St. John's. That was only the second time, I guess, in school history that they had defeated a Big East team, the previous being when they defeated Syracuse in the tournament, Sorrentine from the parking lot, 2005. And then how about this? This is just a local point of pride for UVM. given who the school can recruit, like you stay fairly regional for the most part. UVM is 28-1 in its last 29 games against teams from the state of New York. That's extremely impressive and something that matters when you are a John Becker and you are trying to continue to keep Vermont, not just at the level where it's one or two in the America East, but fighting for getting into the tournament and winning. You beat out that many schools, 28 out of 29 games. Extremely impressive. Good on them. Parrish, I don't know if you have any more thoughts on Lamb or Vermont, but I do want to ask you this. I think the answer is no, but the listeners deserve to know the answer to this. Have you ever listened to a Phish album, even, I'm not even going to say front to back because I know the answer to that is no, but have you ever even like sat down and tried to listen to like three or four Phish songs like consecutively?
Sure. I mean, I've got friends who were in that scene, you know?
Wait, what?
What, you think it's crazy that I would have friends who listen to Phish?
No. When you say I got friends that are in that scene, that means like they were hitting up like 10 shows a year, like traveling with the band kind of thing.
Like, sure. Like, you know, whether it was Phish, Widespread Panic, you know, that whole scene, like, let's go, let's go on tour mindset. You know, who's a massive Phish fan?
I know a lot of people, but the CBS connection would be one Will Brinson. But who are you going to say?
Adam Zucker.
CBS. Adam Zucker. Yes, I'm very aware of this because we have discussed Phish on multiple occasions. He is big time into Trey & Co. No doubt about it. Yep.
Right. So I would not consider myself a Phish fan, but I'm aware of their existence and of how much the people who love them actually love them.
Very cool. All right. I'm going to dodge all attempting Phish puns and just shout out South Burlington High School. And I'm good on Vermont for now. If you're good, I'm going to be seeing them at Yale Sunday, December 1st. If Anthony Lamb goes for like 47 points, maybe we'll talk about him then. But yeah, do keep an eye. We're telling you now, nice and early, Vermont might be the best mid-major team in America and certainly capable of winning a tournament game when we get to March if they keep this up.
So there's nothing great on tap from a matchup perspective in the next few days. How about this? We don't actually have another game between two currently ranked teams until next Wednesday.
Mm.
Trivia time. Can you name the game?
Is it quasi-gettable?
I don't know.
Okay.
I would not be able to get it if I didn't look it up.
By the way, I feel like trivia time is more like historical facts, and when you're asking me to something that happens in the future, like you're kind of bending the rules of trivia time. Like,
okay. It's an opening round game in the battle for Atlantis.
Okay, is Seton Hall involved?
It is number 13 Seton Hall against Levitt, Oregon.
That is such a quality first round game, because if you'll notice, those who might have been looking at the schedule this weekend, as we're about to talk about what's going down in New York and others, because college basketball season started earlier in November than it usually does, we have the benefit of getting these tournaments. We got some this week and then obviously all the Thanksgiving week ones, so we've got them spread out, but you'll notice that the first round of those almost always stinks. Like the Charleston tournament that Villanova's playing in. No, is it Villanova? No, Xavier. Anyway, the point is the best possible matchups for those are obviously in the title game because they try and build them that way, but that usually means that those quarterfinal games aren't that good. So Battle for Atlantis, by far the best of the November tournaments, evidenced by the fact that you get the Ducks versus the Pirates right there, right off the bat to start the tourney.
Now, on that same day, next Wednesday, we will have the title game of the Maui Invitational, and it could theoretically be number 3 Michigan State against number 4 Kansas, but that's not set yet. But either way, we don't have a game between two currently ranked teams in the AP poll again until next Wednesday. But the 2K Classic is Thursday night. Kind of intriguing. Doubleheader at Madison Square Garden. It's number 22 Texas against Georgetown. Number 1 Duke against Cal. I'd like to split those up and maybe do it Duke against Texas and Cal against Georgetown, but they didn't ask my opinion. So anything interest you there?
Well, okay, yeah, because I'll be going Friday. So we will obviously have a Friday podcast and we'll talk about whatever is necessary to talk about to preview, even if briefly, because we should get Duke hopefully versus Texas or, Texas Georgetown, the winner of that. I mean, Georgetown Duke is solid too, but Texas is the better team there. You're not wrong, Parrish, by the way. Thursday, this is a weird week for college sports in general. I mean, the college football slate, I think, is putrid. You get, Ohio State, Penn State, and that might be it. And then college basketball, unfortunately, even though you've got a few of these events, like Friday night might give you something, but there's just not quite enough there that I was hoping that would be there. I mean, Thursday is barren. So Texas-Georgetown is the biggest game to monitor by far. Georgetown, capable of winning, 3-1 at this point, had a weird bad loss by 15 at home against Penn State. Most recently played Sunday and defeated Georgia State. They got a very entertaining backcourt there. Georgetown's a bit of a mess, but they're fun to watch. Omer Yurtseven has been pretty solid to start the season. The senior, obviously formerly from NC State, big man in the middle. Georgetown, I've seen a little bit of them. They've used him, and then they've combined Mac McClung, and then I'm way in on James Akinjo. He's been a little bit shaky to start, 41.4% from two-point range, and has only hit 5 of his 17 three-point attempts this year. But if Akinjo and McClung really get going and clicking, they can be a very fun watch. So that will be... And that's the game to watch on Thursday. Texas has yet to lose. It has the really impressive win, probably a top 3 or 4 win of the season of anyone in college basketball so far. They beat Purdue almost 2 weeks ago, and now they get a real challenge here. And then if they win, you would think they would play Duke because Duke plays Cal, and Cal's not good whatsoever. Andrew Jones continues to be a great story. He's shooting 41% from three-point range, and he's earning significant minutes. Like, he's all the way back. Teams up well with Matt Coleman. So... last thing I'll say on it is, if you're a Texas fan and you're a Texas fan that has some frustrations with what the team hasn't been yet under Shaka Smart, this is the kind of game where it's like, don't lose to Georgetown. Please just get the win here so we can get a chance against Duke and we don't have to play Cal, because you want to build up that resume. A lot of people think that Texas can be top 25 level. That is by far the biggest one. And then the winners play on Friday and the losers play each other on Friday as well at MSG. I will be at that Friday night, but not Thursday.
Also, if you go back in time a little bit when that Georgetown job was open, one of the names that was loosely connected to it,
you're right,
was Shaka Smart. Now, I just think he wasn't ready to leave Texas under those circumstances because he was coming off, I believe, a not so great season. But that's another storyline. And then, you know, I know he's done it before, but still, Patrick Ewing coaching in the Garden is kind of cool.
That even dawned on me. It is cool, but he's done it previously.
Yeah,
because
sure,
St. John's. But yeah, that is a. That is another cool little subplot there. And I think, just, you know, 20 seconds here on Ewing, like, I think he's doing a solid job. Like, this is, to me, already, given recruiting wise and then just the way the program's going, he was 15-15 his first season, 19-14 last season, 9-9 in the league. I don't think Georgetown will be a tournament team this season, but even if it isn't, I still like the direction that the program is. You would agree, right? To me, like, he's getting a longer leash anyway, Parrish, but I think that Georgetown is heading, generally speaking, where it should be under Ewing. This is not a disaster by any means.
No, if you look at, you know, guys who came back to coach their alma maters, it's sort of a mixed bag, right? Chris Mullin, not so great. Fred Hoiberg, terrific. Penny, obviously, off to an incredible start in terms of recruiting and making the program relevant. And Patrick's in there somewhere, but, like, in, you know, probably below Penny and Fred, but certainly above Chris. He's doing a good job. He's doing a rock solid job from my perspective. I'm a little detached from it, obviously. Like, I don't see the day to day. But if you were asking me, is Patrick Ewing doing a good job? I would say, yeah, I think so.
All right. I got a trivia time for you.
Okay. Hey, let me say one thing quick, because the one loss for Georgetown is that Penn State loss you mentioned. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to go lose by 15 points to Penn State. But I will say, Penn State's 26th at KenPom right now. Pat Chambers, past 3 seasons, I know they haven't made the NCAA tournament. My man lives on the hot seat. But 2018, they finished 19th at KenPom. 2019, number 43 at KenPom. 2020, number right now. They're number 26 at KenPom. So that's a 3 years, top 45 at KenPom at Penn State, one of, and perhaps the toughest, Power 5 men's basketball job in the country. And, like, he's doing a rock solid job, too. And I know he always has to answer questions about not making the NCAA tournament, but Penn State's not bad. That's the point.
I don't disagree with you. They aren't bad, but I think Georgetown just, you know, I was expecting a little bit of a stronger performance there. I'm also more of a seller on Penn State than probably anyone, and I'm willing to be wrong as always. Okay. To wrap up the pod, I've got a Duke-related trivia time for you, okay?
Let's go.
Okay, so Duke is back. They're the number one team. It's the number one team in the AP Top 25 this week, resuming the spot it had when it closed out the end of the regular season last season. Some may not realize that the AP Top 25, actually the last set of rankings that come out, are right before the tournament starts. There is not, I believe football does it differently, there is not a set of AP rankings that come out once the tournament settles. So, in terms of rankings, Duke was the number one team in college basketball at the end of last season because that's where it set going into the tournament before it didn't make the Final Four, yada, yada. So now it's back at number one. Duke, so a couple of questions for you, see how close you can get, and this will inform the listeners. Duke, in getting to number one, extends its men's Division I record in terms of most weeks in school history at number one in the AP Top 25. How many weeks do you think that Duke in its history has been the number one team in college basketball?
7 million.
You're just a little high.
Okay.
You're just and I encourage listeners to play along as well. So this is not including, obviously, off season. In a given season, there are, what, 20 weeks in a season?
Like nobody knows the answer to that question except for the Duke SIT.
That's correct. But I just want – just what do you think the number is? And then we'll get to something that's more gettable after that. Just what would you think the number is?
4 million.
You're still a little high. Parrish, just are you afraid of saying, like, 3,000 and it being 2,000?
No, I'm not afraid of anything. I just have no context for that. I couldn't possibly. I mean, I could guess. Okay, you ready? How many is the question? How many weeks has Duke been number one?
Yep.
I'm gonna say, 72.
How about this? It's more than double that. How about this, you idiot? No, it's not. The answer is 143. See, I'm about to say 147 because I was looking at the wrong number. Close to double. Facts matter. Good job, Matt. 147,
okay.
Which is the record. The number two team is at 134, and the number three team is at 125. What okay. team is number two all time in weeks at number one in the history of the AP Top 25?
Kentucky.
Kentucky is third at 125. What team is number two?
North Carolina.
It is not North Carolina. In fact, are you ready for this absurd stat? You're not ready, but you're about to be ready.
Oh, I got it. UCLA.
Correct. UCLA, because of those 134 weeks, it's been number one. You want to say like 99 of them were under John Wooden, maybe even 100. How about this, though? Two other crazy stats here, and this will all be in the court report, which is going up Thursday. Duke has been number one 147 weeks. The ACC as a conference, which includes North Carolina, okay? All the times that North Carolina has been number one. The ACC as a conference has done it 147 times. Crazy, right? Insane. And not only that, Duke has more than 100 games more as the number one ranked team in college basketball under Mike Krzyzewski than it has been as an unranked one. More than 250 times in 250 games. It's just an aside. Like, you know, it's not much to talk about. It's just crazy. Like, that's stupid. More than 100 games, you've been the number one team versus being unranked entirely. It just speaks to why Krzyzewski has a case to being the best, literally the best college basketball coach ever.
And it's still amazing. Every time I update the top 25 and one, somebody will tweet me and go, oh, you're overrating Duke again. Like the safest thing you can do when you're putting together college basketball rankings is just assume that Duke's going to be awesome. Because Duke is almost always awesome. Almost. And, they, you know, I don't know if they're the best team in the country right now, but they are undefeated. They are ranked number one. And they are more balanced. Remember, after the Champions Classic, we talked about this. They're more balanced than they've been in recent years. At this moment, they got five players averaging between 10 and 17 points per game. Nobody averaging more than 17. Five players between 10 and 17. And Vernon Carey, 15 points, 8 rebounds, while shooting 62.2% from the field.
Impressive. I expect him to kill Cal and then hopefully to get a good game on Friday because I'll be in the building, so I'd like something good.
Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Terry, MF, and Teagle. He's the legend. Shouts to Larnell. And please go subscribe to the Island College Basketball Podcast via Apple Podcasts. Rated favorably. 5 stars, nice comments. And that'll ensure you're getting the latest episode into your phone as soon as possible. So you guys go knock that out. We'll talk to you again on Friday. Till then, take care.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.